Hello, my name is Brian Delaney, and thank you for joining me on a very special episode of Road Safety at Rush Hour. This podcast is presented by the Roadway Safety Foundation, a national nonprofit organization dedicated to reducing the frequency and severity of motor vehicle crashes, injuries, and fatalities through improvements to roadway systems and their environment. On this episode, I am so excited to have the opportunity to interview former United States Secretary of Transportation, the Honorable Mr. Rodney Slater. Secretary Slater, thank you so much for being on the podcast with me today.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's good to be on the show.
Thank you so much. So, Mr. Slater, I just wanted to take a little bit of time to introduce you to our viewers and listeners on the podcast. As U.S. Secretary of Transportation under President Bill Clinton, Secretary Slater passed several historic legislative initiatives over his tenure, including the Transportation Equity Act for the 21st century, which guaranteed a record $200 billion in surface transportation investment through 2003. And prior to his tenure as Transportation Secretary, Secretary Slater served as Administrator of the Federal Highway Administration, where, as the agency's first African-American administrator in its century-long history, oversaw the development of an innovative financing program that resulted in hundreds of transportation projects being completed 2 to 3 years ahead of schedule with greater cost efficiencies. Currently, Secretary Slater, you are a partner at Squire Patton Boggs and one of the leaders of the firm's best-in-class practice in corporate compliance advice, ensuring best business practices for various companies. Secretary Slater, I wanted to take a little bit of time to talk to you a little bit about your career. You've had quite a career in transportation and safety. What got you interested in transportation and roadway safety? Was there a moment during your career or even beforehand that inspired you or sparked that passion?
Well, I've always been a lover of transportation. I always viewed it as a way of moving beyond one's confines to exploring the world. And I recall early on, Brian, playing a little game with my sisters where we used to say, the next car is your car, the next car is mine.
Yes.
And you're just sort of watching as this, you know, string of cars pass along the roadway in your hometown, my little hometown of Marianna, Arkansas. And in my mind's eye, I was just always fascinated about the license plates and where the cars might be going. And I often say that I have to admit that a lot of times, most of the time, my cars, you know, were clunkers. I mean, they seem like sometimes they could hardly get along. And I remember just the belly laughs of having that experience but still being fascinated because they were on the move. And then you hear stories about really tragic stories about people who are injured and who can lose their lives because of the system. And that was always, you know, a matter to be concerned about as well. But I officially got into transportation when I was appointed to the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Commission by then Governor Clinton. Wow. This was in 1987, and I was appointed to the commission, and I can tell you that I never could have imagined at that point that literally 10 years later, 1997, I would not only be a part of the administration in Washington, D.C., first as federal highway administrator, but that in 1997, again, 10 years from the time that I was appointed to the highway commission, that I'd actually become Secretary of Transportation. And so that's sort of in a nutshell, the journey. And early on, I realized that safety is the number one objective goal for any transportation professional, and especially a member of the commission, as I was in Arkansas, Federal Highway Administrator, and definitely as Secretary of Transportation.
Wow. I've always wanted to know, what is that process like when, you know, when a president approaches you to join his cabinet? How did President Clinton at the time present this opportunity to you? It sounds like you had known him quite a few years before he even became president when he was governor. What was that call like? How did you feel? And what sort of, what happened?
You know, I was always a staffer, actually providing suggestions to the governor and then president as far as who he should consider for a position like this. And frankly, that was the case in 1987 when I was appointed to the Highway Commission. I had actually, as a member of his staff, given him a list of five other names.
Wow.
And during the course of the discussion, he made it clear that he wanted to appoint me to the position. And it's interesting. He said something to me that really, I mention it because it sort of played out in the same way as I became Federal Highway Administrator and Secretary. And that was, he said, look, I want someone in this position who will actually help me take the power of this position to, in the case of the Highway Commission, to the citizens of Arkansas. He said, I don't want them to have to come to Little Rock or to have to come to the commission. I'm interested in the commission understanding its responsibility and actually going to them. And he said, so that's why this appointment is so important to me. And because you've been with me through my reelection to the governorship after having lost, by the way, he said, I think you understand the promise that I made. And that is that we're going to put the people of Arkansas first. When he became president, it was putting the American people first, you see. And he said, so I want you to consider this. And I became a member of the commission. And I remember one of the first things I did was to go out and to organize what were called road corridor organizations. So you basically take a stretch of roadway, you know, traveling many, many miles, and those roadways are going to go through certain communities. Well, you try to get people organized along those communities so that they can leverage the power of their region when it comes to sitting around the table of the commission and deciding where resources would go. And my job was especially difficult because I represented one of the most economically distressed parts of the state. Hmm. And so I wanted there to be other voices beyond my own when I was engaged in deliberations with my colleagues who were other members of the commission. And that's the way I did my work for roughly 6 years. I ended up leaving to become a member of the Clinton administration, but only after some, you know, contemplation and really soul searching, because my objective was to really get the governor elected president. Mm-hmm. I was becoming, or I had just become, chairman of the commission at the time. And I had a number of promises that I had made. And so I wanted to serve out that time. But long story short, there were a number of people who encouraged me to actually make my way to Washington, D.C. And interestingly, many of them saying, you know, very few people have a chance to work in a president's cabinet. And then even fewer have a chance to work for someone they know.
Right.
And someone, frankly, who knows them. And for the first time, it was made plain to me that a president really needs to be around people that they know, as well as others, and all of them, you know, having capability to do the work, for sure. So that's how my experiences brought me to the administration. And then this is the interesting part. Because of my work with all of the states as the Federal Highway Administrator, I developed relationships that were just very, very solid and significant. And it was really a group of state DOT heads that recommended me to the president. It was not something that I did. As a matter of fact, I would not have done that. I was not predisposed to do anything like that. As I said, my relationship with the president was such that I was always helping to identify other people. And I had done that for many, many years. And it's interesting, this group of DOT heads, I remember there were 5 to 7, as I recall.
Sure.
But they basically said to me, we want to tell you what we've done. And they did. And they said, we wanted to tell you after we had done it, because we knew that you would not have done that yourself. And it's really based on the wonderful working relationship that we've had with you over the last 4 years. So that's how that started to get going. And then I remember the president later said, he said, you know, I was feeling very good about all of this. And then I realized I was getting as many calls from Republicans as Democrats.
Wow.
And
awesome.
Yeah. And then, but he said, it's interesting. He said, but that's how I would have expected it, because again, there are no Democratic roads or Republican bridges.
Right.
It's all about transportation, and you've done the work as I wanted you to do it. So this is a natural result of that.
That's incredible. And you know, you've said so many things that have struck me. One, as you know, speaking about leadership, you've talked about so many traits of a leader, and I'm a young man starting out my career, and some of the most important traits of being a leader is one, being accountable, and also building relationships with those that you work with, as well as those that you serve in the communities that you lead, is so important to being a successful leader. And you did that with the state DOT officials that you collaborated with in Arkansas, as well as the communities that you served. And then even going further on into when you worked on a national level as Secretary of Transportation, the leader of DOTs across the country, and then implementing programs and policy regulations, I should say, as well, that impact these communities that you have served in the past. I would imagine that it must have been exciting to see the progression of making positive change in communities from the ground, being someone working in a small town, a small community in Arkansas, to then leading communities all across the country as Secretary of Transportation. And I've heard so many things from so many individuals about you as being such a great leader and bringing people together. And I greatly admire that myself in a leader, in that we can make true lasting impact when we as leaders are able to unify those that deep down inside there might be something together that we agree upon. But maybe not see in the basis of these issues that we're working towards. And it sounds like you did such an exceptional job at finding that balance and creating those collaborative opportunities between individuals in communities all across the country.
Well, I thank you, Brian. And I would hope so. And I'll tell you, someone told me early on, they said, the test of a leader is not so much how many people serve you, but how many people you serve.
Right.
And the objective, and the objective is to really enhance the lives of others. And I remember actually taking a lot of the experiences that I had in Arkansas. You know, Arkansas is a relatively small state, so you get to know people in a very personable way.
Sure.
And when I became Federal Highway Administrator, I remember doing something quite similar. I remember hitting the road. So again, taking the power of the position to people. And it was early on in my tenure, but it was what I called a road tour.
Oh, wow.
We started in Buffalo, New York, and I went to Laredo, Texas.
Oh, wow.
So it was.
That's a long drive, Mr. Secretary.
That's a long drive. And we had an RV, and it was 13 states, I think 14 days, 3,500 miles.
Wow.
But the whole objective was to take the resources of our department and to go to every city along the way, not, well, any number of cities along the way, mm-hmm. and to visit with DOTs, to visit with mayors, to visit with business leaders. We did some schools because we had this Garrett A. Morgan Technology Transportation Futures Program designed to get young people involved in transportation. And it was a wonderful experience. And again, we were talking about, you know, reaching beyond our borders as well. So that's why Buffalo and Canada, our number one trading partner.
Sure.
Laredo, Texas, and Mexico, our number two trading partner. And so it was a great experience. And then I did that every year, different parts of the country. And then when I became secretary, we just called them multimodal tours. But we continued to do it with all of the members of my team then, focusing on transit projects, highway projects, port projects, aviation projects. You see, the whole plethora of transportation issues, you know, faced and addressed by state and local governments and by businesses all across the country. But it was a wonderful experience. The last thing we did to build on that, and this sort of takes you to the end of my tenure and something I'm very, very pleased about, is that not only did we use these sorts of efforts to build momentum for our programs, and that's why we were able to, you know, pass all of our major pieces of legislation, because I've been in the states, in the districts of members of Congress,
right,
and so they knew what we wanted to do in partnership with them and with the state and local governments to fund major pieces of legislation. So coming back to Washington and doing the work of Washington was very easy, because I had spent time, and members of my team had spent time with these members in the places where they live. But what we did at the end of the day, after passing, you know, all of our legislation, after getting the first leg of high-speed rail, well, what we thought was the first leg of high-speed rail under our belt with the Acela service from Washington to New York and then sure. on to Boston, and laying out this plan for high-speed rail across the country. After we did all of that, we also started to reach out to transportation professionals in other countries around the world. And we ended up hosting a number of events, one dealing with the continent of Africa, one dealing with Latin America, wow. one that was global, where we had over 100 countries attend, another where we celebrated the 55th anniversary of the Great Chicago Convention. The point to be made there was we were using the stature and the expertise and the excellence of our own programs mm-hmm. to reach out and to be a good partner with other transportation professionals around the globe. And I think that was something that was very, very important. So I'm just excited about all of those little things that we did, touching the community, touching people where they live, learning about their needs and concerns, bringing those concerns to Washington, working to get them addressed, and then using the global platform to also reach beyond the borders of the United States. I just think that that represents sort of the power of America.
Absolutely.
And it was a wonderful experience.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. And, you know, you helped me transition to a topic that is, I think, very timely to what the United States is facing right now. Secretary Slater, as we said, you're highly regarded as a leader in transportation who brought bipartisan and inclusive approach to problem solving and earned tremendous respect and admiration on both sides of the aisle. And this has helped you to have so many great relationships within the White House, within Congress, and in business, and in local communities, and with political leaders across the country. And I wanted to take a minute to talk a little bit about road safety, but also in the context of social equity. I know you mentioned that you had a chance to work in marginalized communities and understand where resources may mean to be allocated and how we can create changes in the roadways and the ways that people use transportation to benefit them in the sense that they can gain access and achieve equity. And I want to talk a little bit about infrastructure. Obviously, Roadway Safety Foundation focuses on infrastructure, and your time at the Federal Highway Administration, obviously the primary focus being infrastructure. And infrastructure, it shapes communities and powers our economy. And but it also plays a role in who in a community can participate sometimes, who is left out, and also who can advance in society. And I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about this idea of road safety as a social equity issues. Are there community-wide actions that we can take as a country right now to make more equitable transportation systems across the United States?
Well, first of all, Brian, this is an excellent question. I think, you know, when I first shared with you my sort of first impressions of the importance of transportation, it was all very consistent with what I view to be the, you know, the essence of being an American, mm-hmm. and tapping into the promises espoused in the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, you know, that mm-hmm. the life and the liberty and the pursuit of happiness, I mean, the connection, the tie that binds. Mm-hmm. That's the way I always viewed transportation. And then I must mention that I also remember early on learning about cases, legal cases that relate to transportation. And frankly, it inspired me to wish to become a lawyer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like the Plessy versus Ferguson decision, which dealt with where you could ride on a train. Mm-hmm. Or the Montgomery bus boycott that dealt with, just like Homer Plessy in Plessy versus Ferguson, here with the Montgomery bus boycott, which occurred in the year that I was born, by the way. And you've got Mrs. Rosa Parks, and she's making the stand by sitting mm-hmm. to be able to ride any place on a bus.
Right.
And then, you know, we just recently celebrated the homegoing and the life of Congressman John Lewis, you know, the historic stand that he took, you know, on Bloody Sunday at the Edmund Pettus Bridge. I mean, again, a transportation structure mm-hmm. That connected him to Highway 80 from Selma all the way to Montgomery. And weeks after Bloody Sunday, there was Dr. King joining Congressman Lewis, then a young 23-year-old
right.
John, on that walk from Selma to Montgomery that ultimately resulted in the Voting Rights Act in 1965, coming 1 year after the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And so you can see all of these transportation connections that served as a staging ground, if you will, for some of the fiercest and successful efforts that led to the perfecting of our union. Because with every step of the way, there was a greater realization of that promise.
Right.
That promise that I was taking for granted in many, many respects when I was sitting on this porch with my sisters and watching the cars go by, as, you know, I was not even in my teens right. at that time. I was probably 6 or 7 years old, and I remember this. Now, having said all of that, I did know about phrases like living on the wrong side of the track. You follow me? Mm-hmm. As a way of describing neighborhoods and lines that divide and how transportation could be used for that purpose. And years later, I would learn about urban renewal and how in a lot of instances, all too many of them, these roadways were built through the heart of some of the economic centers of minority communities, especially Black communities, but minority communities as well. Mm-hmm. And here, you know, I'm thinking about a particular street in Little Rock, Arkansas, the capital city of Arkansas, which served to just obliterate a very dynamic and thriving core economic center that was populated by African-American businesses. And so, you know, there is that history that we have to contend with. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the greater weight of it is to propel us more along that journey of becoming a more perfect union.
Right.
And that's how I seek to view it and to express it.
Right.
And mixed up in all of that, you get into issues of safety, you know, whether it's a mandatory seatbelt law. I remember when we were working to encourage states to have mandatory seatbelt laws, there was a lot of pushback because a lot of people were saying, why do you want to provide another reason for law enforcement to stop a motorist? Because, you know, there was the concern about some of the things that we see manifested today. But we were able to make the argument about the importance of seatbelts as far as safety.
Right.
And I think having the credibility and working with the right organizations, we were able to effectively move that measure forward. And I'm pleased with that. But it was not an issue without controversy. Mm-hmm. Also, there was the recent, and I say recent now, it's been a number of years, but the Adiran case that dealt with the whole issue of set-asides within the transportation policy arena, mm-hmm. that was a case that dealt with transportation and whether you could promote the use of minority and women-owned businesses. But it was a transportation case, and I'm pleased that ultimately the United States Supreme Court said that we could, in fact, continue that program. There were occasions where we had to, quote, mend it, but we didn't mm-hmm. have to end it.
Right.
And that was all a part of a significant speech that President Clinton gave at the National Archives. And he was talking about those kinds of programs and how they can find their seeds for existence in the very documents that serve as the foundation for our democratic form of government.
Right.
I think that speech was given, it was 1995, but I believe it was not long. It was almost 25 years ago. It was, I believe it was in July.
Wow.
Seems like I remember that. So I think transportation can be an investment that ensures, strengthens, enhances the tie that binds. And that's how I've always viewed it. And I do think, by the way, with the advent of automation, that there are ways for us to significantly enhance that capability of the tie that binds. But trying to do so is also fraught with situations where, you know, we could miss the mark as well. And I'm hopeful that we can hit that mark. But COVID has actually accelerated much of our development along the path of using technology
right.
as the tie that binds. And you couple that with transportation and you get smart transportation systems.
Absolutely.
So that's the future.
Yes. You know, connected infrastructure, connected vehicles is the future of road safety going forward, utilizing the new technology that we are developing as a country, as a nation, and combining it with transportation, which is something that most people across the country use every single day, whether it be a pedestrian walking or biking, using micromobility, or someone using the train, using their car, public transit. So I think that connected technology in general combined with transportation is going to make a world of difference within the world, within the realm of safety as we move forward. Secretary Slater, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today and providing your invaluable insights on road safety as a social equity issue, and also giving us an inside look into your career and your time as Secretary of Transportation and Administrator of the FHWA, and also working in communities within Arkansas on transportation safety issues. To have a national leader like you on the podcast is such an honor, and I thank you so much for being here with me today and taking the time to share your insights. So in closing, on behalf of the Roadway Safety Foundation, I would like to thank everyone for tuning in to this episode of our podcast series, Road Safety at Rush Hour. If you enjoyed the podcast and want to hear more, please follow us on Facebook and Twitter at the Roadway Safety Foundation, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your favorite podcast network. As always, this is Brian Delaney signing off, wishing you safe travels all day and every day.